10 Mile in the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both be run Friday, May 31st, on a card that also includes two Pennsylvania Bread Stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 15th.
Racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Scholarships are available. Visit rtip.arizona.edu.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back.
Hour three on this Hall of Fame announcement morning, and Brian Bouye of the Hall of Fame joins us now on the heels of Joel Rosario, Gunrunner, and Justify being added, all in their first years of eligibility. Brian, good morning. Thanks for joining me. Let me try that one more time, and I think we Try that. Well, there we go. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Excellent. And Brian, these are three very worthy, obviously, first year eligibility types. Give us a quick thoughts about two gigantic stars, including the Triple Crown winner in Justify and a campaigner in Gunrunner that traveled the world. Both have gone on to fabulous stallion careers, and Joel Rosario, who is in the midst of a career that undoubtedly was going to put him in the hall.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, you look at Justify, and it was a brief career, six races, but winning the Triple Crown, a career spanned 111 days. It was a little brief for some people, but winning the Triple Crown is a rare and unbelievable achievement. And Justify did that, and he had a spectacular run in those three races. Obviously, a great training job by Bob Baffert, another Hall of Famer. And then you look at Gunrunner. This was a horse that got better and better as his career went on. Horse of the year, won at many, many different tracks, many different types of races, eight grade ones in his career, trained by Steve Asmussen, beat some of the best horses in training. And as you mentioned, both of them have gone on to prolific stallion careers, although that's not related to what the voters are looking at here.
Right.
But both horse of the year, winners. And then you have Joel Rosario, who, he's one of those guys that, he's not even 40 years old yet. He's already got over 3,600 career wins. He ranks fourth all time in earnings. He's got an Eclipse Award. He's won a Derby. He's won two Belmonts. He's got 15 Breeders' Cup wins. He's been in the top 10 in North American earnings 15 times already. So obviously accomplished enough at this point to get in, and still has a fantastic career ahead of him. I mean, he could be one of those guys we're still talking about another 10, 12 years as being one of the best jockeys out there. So a remarkable career so far for Joel that surely looks like it's, in its prime years.
Undoubtedly. And, all the numbers and all the specifics. We're going to talk to Joel in about 10 minutes and congratulate him and let him soak in the appreciation. The two horses, obviously, for the connections that include, first of all, even the head of the connections, China Horse and Sal Cumin's Head of Plains and Starlight and Windstar, John Gunther and Tanya Gunther. And I look forward to reaching out to John and Tanya as well in crafting this horse. And then, we've heard the story so often, Rick Hammerly, in fact, I'm sure Rick will talk about it on Friday, Baffert coming in and saying, that maiden race, that race has got to go. he was referring to a race that would turn out to be the February 18th 7-furlong maiden special that went with a field of five that Justify won and got his career going. So there's a lot of congratulations to go around. And then you look at Gunrunner on the breeding side, Don Leone, the Besselou, part of the story, and in fact, even ahead of Bessie Lou's involvement with the Damn Quiet Giant, that just seeing Quiet Giant makes me remember that Ned Evans, that's a Ned Evans family that distilled Gunrunner with the help of Candy Ride. So there's that portion, and Steve Asmussen, Steve was sitting with me here. The next morning after he was added to the hall, and that was right in the midst of, in the wake of Gunrunner. 12 wins, 19 starts. In fact, I was looking at these, Brian, and I was shocked at how many of Gunrunner's, big wins I was in attendance for. In fact, I've got I'll put up a picture of his Whitney win later this morning. So anyway, the Gunrunner, Justify, Joel Rosario. I'm sure, I know you don't disclose the vote totals, but I'm sure we had some near misses.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's always tough when there's candidates that are right on the fence there. And we did have several. We had 17 finalists that made the ballot this year. And to advance to the ballot, we have a nominating committee. And to get to the ballot, they have to receive support from two-thirds of the nominating committee to get there. And several of these candidates got close to the Hall of Fame this year, just missing by a few votes in a couple of cases. So I think there's a lot of worthy candidates out there. We've had these discussions before. There's a lot of really good candidates. And, I think several of them are going to be Hall of Famers, over the next few years. It's just, this wasn't their year to get to that level, but there's certainly a lot of other Hall of Famers that were in that finalist list there. It's just a matter of time for them.
Well, in addition to the three contemporary names, six other Hall of Fame members in this class, and talk about the historic review results and the pillars of the turf. Give us a few of the other, let's see, what, six others?
Yeah, sure. So for pillars of the turf, we've got two guys named Hirsch. They're not related to each other. We've got Clement L. Hirsch and Joe Hirsch, as well as Harry Guggenheim. And these were all giants of the sport. Harry Guggenheim was one of the people who helped reorganize racing in the 1950s in New York and later helped establish NYRA. He was a tremendous owner, had a lot of success as an owner and a breeder and an industry leader with Kane Hoy Stable. He campaigned a Kentucky Derby winner, Dark Star, who was the only horse ever to beat Native Dancer. Also had Bald Eagle, had Ak-Ak for a while. It was very impressive, on both levels of breeding and owning horses. He won the Kentucky Oaks four times, the American Derby, the Hollywood Derby, the Travers, the list goes on and on. But he was also a leader in the sport with a jockey club. He had success internationally in England and Ireland, just did so many things for the game. And then you look at Clement L. Hirsch, and a lot of people remember the name best through his association with it as one of the founders of the Oak Tree Meets, which was a huge thing for racing and helping out the sport, benefiting charities. But he was somebody who just had a reach so far beyond just on the track. He won a Special Eclipse Award. They changed the name of one of the races out there to him in California to honor Clement L. Hirsch. And he's had family that's gone on. His son Bo has had a lot of success in the sport. Just been somebody who was a major influence in the game. And then speaking of major influences, Joe Hirsch, I mean, what can you say about him? And talk about a career that, was basically half a century. This was somebody who was covering the sport all the way back in Citation, and then, was all the way covering it through the early part of the 21st century. A mentor to so many journalists out there. But his influence, as a writer, of multiple books, establishing the Turf Writers Association, he was the guy that everybody followed, when it was time for the Derby doings in the spring. And when he endorsed something, you knew it was a big deal. He was one of the people who really, advocated for the Arlington Million, at the Breeders' Cup, events like that, Dubai World Cup. These were things that, weren't always universally accepted when they first came out. And Joe kind of gave them their stamp of approval. And, a lot of people kind of saw the value in what he did there. So, he was the dean of racing writers, and, he just influenced entire multiple generations of writers. So three great pillars of the turf there. And then when you look at the historic review committee, these are spectacular selections. I'm really excited about the three that are going in. We looked at just pre-1900 candidates this year. We wanted to break down the historic review a little bit into more specific eras. So next year they'll look at 1900 through 1959. But in this group, Abe Hawkins was a jockey who was long overdue being in the Hall of Fame. He was arguably the best rider in the country pre-Civil War years, and then had success still going on afterwards. He was born into slavery, but he rode Les Comte, another one of the Hall of Famers is getting in this year, to hand Lexington his only defeat of his career. But then he also won races that you've heard of. He was the winner of the third Travers Stakes here in Saratoga. He won the Jerome Handicap a couple of times. He had won the Jersey Derby the first couple runnings there. Just had such tremendous success. And the style of riding he had was later kind of emulated by other riders who got, kind of a little more popularity because of it. So Abe Hawkins getting into the Hall of Fame was long, long overdue. And then you look at Aristides, the first Kentucky Derby winner, and pretty fitting that, on the 150th Derby, we're finally getting around to the first Derby winner. But he got in because of much more than that. In that first Derby, he set an American record for a mile and a half. He also set two other American speed records throughout his career. He beat Ten Brook, a Hall of Famer, a couple times. He beat Tom Ogletree, a Hall of Famer. A horse that he didn't, his owner didn't think too highly of him early on. He was owned by H.P. McGrath from Kentucky, but he later kind of saw the value in this horse, and you know, he went on to have a great career. He won or placed in 15 of his 21 starts and just had a tremendous run there. And our third is Le Comte, who's a pre-Civil War horse. Like I mentioned, he was the only one ever to beat Lexington in his career. Won 11 of his 17 races. And then this is, when I say races, he had 17 official starts, but most of those were in three or five heat race events. So, you know, this was a horse that raced many, many miles and just had tremendous success.
It really is a fun and eclectic group. Abe Hawkins, Aristides, and Le Comte, Harry Guggenheim, Clement Hirsch, and Joe Hirsch. And, of course, the media roll of honor is named for Joe as well. And a double, kind of a double honor to put Joe in as a pillar of the turf as well. And then Joel Rosario, Gunrunner, and Justify. Brian, what give everybody the details of the Hall of Fame ceremony this year, and let's let people know, you know, what's going on at the Hall this summer when they come visit.
Sure. So the induction ceremony will be Friday, August 2nd here in Saratoga Springs. It's at the Fasig Tipton Sales Pavilion, where we've had it for a number of years. It's a great home for this event. 10:30 in the morning, we will get started. The doors will open at 9 a.m. You know, it's a smaller venue, but, you know, there'll be room there if you get in line early enough. You know, we're also streaming the event on our website at racingmuseum.org in case you can't be in Saratoga to attend. So we're really excited about it. It's going to be a big summer of exhibitions, and obviously the Belmont coming to Saratoga gets us cranked up here a little bit earlier at the Hall of Fame. So we've got a lot of events during Belmont Stakes Week, and then obviously when the meet starts, we've got some new exhibits that we're opening. We've got an exhibit on Ruffian that's going to be open this summer, and we've also got an exhibit on Paul Mellon. It's just going to be an all-encompassing exhibit on his life in racing, in art, in philanthropy. So we've got a lot of great things programming all throughout the summer, and we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a great run, and can't wait for the induction ceremony to enshrine the latest legends of the sport here.
Brian Bouye from the Hall, and don't you have your Derby preview coming up?
Yeah, this Saturday at noon, we've actually got an entire day of activities. We've got a museum duplicate book sale, so if you're interested in some old books of the museum that we have extra copies of, we're going to be selling those throughout the day. But we've got our Kentucky Derby preview at noon. We've got Tom Amello and Jeff Carl who'll be breaking down the Derby action, and then next Saturday for the Derby, we've got our annual Kentucky Derby party, which is one of the big events in Saratoga of the spring. Well, we expect to have 500 people here. It's going to be packed, having a great time, and if you're interested in tickets for the Derby party, you can get right on our website, and kind of the kickoff to the big season here. We're really excited about everything.
Outstanding. Brian, congratulations on putting this all together. And of course, I know there'll be some disappointment, but there's some other worthy candidates, of course, that fell short, and assuming they'll all be back on the ballot next year, but certainly on the contemporary front, on the election side, Rosario, Gunrunner, Justify, pretty elite class.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Bouye, everybody, and the Hall. And if you've never been to the ceremony, you gotta get there early and get in line. But I've been to a few, and I haven't been to one since the show went to mornings, actually, now that I think about it. When we were 4 to 7, it was a different story. It could go. Let's grab Joel for a minute. I won't keep him long, but too irresistible, and we'll catch up with these other, all the various parties involved with this terrific class. For Ron Anderson, this is number 10, the 10th rider that Ron has had as a jock with significant time. And I think Joel is Joel's with us. Joel. Nah. Joel. Maybe not. Hold on. Joel? Nope, not yet. All right, let's try this again. And I thought, couldn't tell if it was a machine or if it was him. Ron Anderson, in his career, Fernando Toro, Gary Stevens, Jerry Bailey, Russell Bays, Garrett Gomez, Chris Antley, John Velasquez, Kent DeSormo, Corey Nakatani, and now Joel Rosario. And what can you say about that list? You know, and obviously at different amounts of contribution to, you know, to each of these careers. Yeah, for instance, I mean, Johnny, you know, late in his career, but he's really added a, you know, significant Joel. Huh. We're not this is I don't know if this means he's on the line or what exactly. We'll see when he's free. All right. Because we do have plenty more to do. We got to get to John White and I just heard back from David Fisk, DJ, and congratulations to Ron Winchell and Steve Asmussen, Scott Plazzi, everybody involved in Gunrunner's career. I've got a bunch of congratulations to send out. In lieu of Joel, let me get Ron for a second and congratulate him. There he is. Ron Anderson joins us for a minute. I'm having trouble making that connection with Joel, but Ron, just amazing. And you know, you've obviously had that group of 10, you know, for various portions of their careers. But Joel, you know, for a nice long extended run here that really, it just it's very super deserving and as you know, as much of a gentleman as any rider in contemporary racing.
You know, Stevie has this amazing disposition with everybody. I mean, I've had people that, you know, have the ropes by the paddock that will go out of their way to say, you know, he's my favorite rider, my favorite. You've been here 25 years, like John Shearer in California. He'd been there for, I don't know, he died at 100. He's my favorite rider ever, Ronnie, ever. He just has a special way about him. He's easy to root for. And, you know, Steve, this kid came from nothing. He grew up in a spot in the Dominican. They didn't even have hot and cold running water. No electricity.
There's Joel. Joel, hold on. I think we got you now. Ron, Joel called in, so let me put the two of you
Great.
Together.
Go ahead.
No,
go
you're
ahead.
Good. Joel, thank congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Oh, and Ron, you know, Ron was just talking about, you know, your origin and the first person, in addition to thinking about Ron, the first person I thought of was Barry Abrams.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Special person in our lives for sure.
Yep.
Joel, talk about what this means and you know, and your career to this point.
Well, me and my family and all the people that, you know, they follow me in my raising and really happy, you know, really happy about it and I'm even happy for them too, you know, because they, you know, how are people that follow me every day, and we, you know, I cannot thank enough to all the people that really give me the opportunity to get it.
Well, and what's amazing, what's so unique about the this Hall of Fame, and I suppose tennis and I guess golf and tennis, has the same policy. You know, you can be in the middle of your career, you get to a certain level of experience and you become eligible, and you know, and then your career continues. I mean, you're probably not even halfway in your career. You've got you could ride another 25 years.
Yeah. So, yeah, really glad it happened. And, you know, like I say, I, you know, thanks enough to all the people who really support me every day. And it's, you know, very, very special.
What moment that comes to mind immediately, Joel, when you know, you think it that kind of defines you as a rider? Is there a particular win that you that you treasure more than any other?
I mean, I think all of them they are very important to me, and yeah, it can be any, you know, we have some big winners like winning the Derby, winning the Dubai Cups, and other British Cup races, and the Caribbean Classic, and you know, all that stuff, and I mean, they all important to me.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I mentioned Barry. I mean, who else? Who do you feel has been really key and instrumental in your success?
Well, I have a lot of people that really give me a lot of opportunity in my success, and I have to say, you know, starting in the Dominican Republic, when I came to the United States, you know, I have a lot of people that really supported me, and I have so many people that I have to thank you to them.
Feel free. I mean, use this as practice for your speech in Saratoga. You know, who comes to mind?
I mean, a lot of people. You know, starting in, you know, Joe Sal in California, when he started. You know, he gave me a big opportunity to probably be where I am today, and you know, people in the Dominican Republic too, and. And so many people that you know, the people who they gave me my first, you know, winning, I came my first miles, and you know, not even winning with, you know, when I came to California. So I've been blessed and really happy, you know, a lot of great people that support me.
Well, and a big list of Eclipse Award winning mounts that actually, it's amazing.
Yeah.
The Knicks Go, Animal Kingdom, Accelerate, Jackie's Warrior, Epicenter, Close Hatches, Uni, Blind Luck, Jaywalk, Game Winner, Orb, of course, the Derby, Tonalist, the Belmont, et cetera. A bunch of other great ones, though.
Yeah. And also, you know, I have to say that, you know, I think, you know, to me, I think Ron, it was, you know, he's one of the, my, you know, I am where I am today because, you know, all the time that, you know, he put into me, with me, and all that stuff. I think he's really, you know, he's probably the key to be where I am today too.
Wow. Ron, some thoughts from you?
Well, like I was saying, Steve, you know, people don't realize all of Joel's background. He wanted to be a baseball player. He ended up at jockey school. You know, humble beginnings. He comes to the United States. He's in Northern California. We got a great story. When I was working for Jerry Bailey, I asked him one day, I said, who's this kid you're riding at Golden Gate? He says, in my best Bobby Frankel accent, you better watch this guy. And I said, what does that mean? He goes, you might be working for him someday. So years later, you know, I end up with Joel, and he's, you know, the watch. I told him yesterday, because I was whispered this yesterday, and I said, you know, there's lots of people in the industry that have to work at what they do. Joel has a gift. He's a gifted athlete to begin with. You should see him hit a baseball, or you should see him hit a golf ball. he can really, really hit one. But he's just gifted. His hands, he's got amazing hands. He can get horses to settle that no one can get to settle. He's incredible. He deserves this for many, many reasons. And, Fernando was a huge to-do last year because he was my big break. But Joel, just the way he's worked and come along, come through the ranks and all, in the respect of the other riders for him, he deserves all this and more. So, like you said, he's got plenty of more years to show his talents, and we're just looking forward to all that.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron.
Well, and since I've got you, a quick thought about Track Phantom, who looked terrific on Sunday.
Well, let me jump in for 1 second. Steve, kind of Joel's recommendation to maybe put a little set of blinkers on him. They said he worked, even Mike said this morning, I listened for a little while this morning, was saying he worked fantastic. Very interesting situation at this point. The draw is going to be so important for he and Johnny on his horse and Louis Saez and a couple other these others. You know, the draw could change the dynamics of everything. So we'll see what happens, and we'll go from there.
Joel, I've been making the point that Track Phantom is coming in under the radar, right? I mean, there's very little pressure, it seems, given what, given the Louisiana Derby and the Risen Star result.
Right.
Now, and where do you stand, Ron, for Oaks, by the way?
He's going to end up on Steve's filly that was second.
Our Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman. I think she's training exceptional from what Scotty and Steve had said. Obviously, Kenny's filly and Chad's filly are probably very tough, but she's not going to surprise us if she jumps up and runs huge.
Well, she does need, right now, you need some help. Right.
Yes, but yeah. I'm anticipating
getting in.
Both races are good. Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Well, Ron Anderson, Joel Rosario, so happy for you. And
thank you.
It's a tremendous and fitting honor to join, so many of the contemporaries you ride against every day. Hall of Famer, Joel Rosario. It sounds good.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Ronnie. Thanks, Joel.
Thank you.
Outstanding and amazing. 39, and so what? I said 25. Figure, 16 years, another 8. They're riding till 50, 55, right? And he's natural. He's a natural lightweight. He's not. He doesn't have to work at it. That's not fair. Of course he works at it, but he's a little bit more, naturally trim than many that have to, fight that battle. Let's get John White in here. I've been promising John for 2 days, and he's going to talk about the Oaks, give us an early line on the Oaks, because that topic is... I mean, Andy today. Andy surprised me with that suggestion that Torpedo Anna could end up going even potentially favored, and I'm sure John has got some thoughts about the Hall of Famers. John, good morning.
Well, good morning, Steve, and I'm so happy for Joel Rosario and also his agent Ron Anderson. If there was a Hall of Fame for jockey agents, there's no doubt about it. Ron Anderson would be in there. I first got to know Ron when he had Fernando Toro at the beginning of Ron Anderson's career as an agent. And Joel Rosario, I got to know quite well here when he was a regular rider on the Southern California circuit. And just, I was very sorry to see him relocate to back east, but that's been key to him in terms of taking his career to another level and getting into the Hall of Fame. So it was a very wise move for him to leave Southern California, but we sure miss him on a regular basis in Southern California. And I'll tell you who he kind of reminds me of in terms of having a ton of talent as a jockey, but also being a first-class person and just a friendly person and someone that you just can't help but basically love, and that's Sandy Hawley. I think those two guys, because Sandy Hawley is just as classy and friendly as they come, and so is Joel. I'm also very tickled that Joe Hirsch becomes a pillar of the turf, because as everybody knows, that guy has been a pillar of the turf forever. And as Brian Bouye mentioned, Joe Hirsch was a mentor to so many journalists, and I'm very honored to say that I was one of those journalists that he mentored. So really very pleased about that with Joe Hirsch.
It's a good group. At the same time, there's some horses and individuals when it comes to the trainers. You know, we're in a little bit of a drought on that front in particular. But the Kona Gold situation is just inexplicable. I can't believe that I would be as shocked as I am every single year that he doesn't get in. It's crazy.
Well, I certainly am in that camp. I have voted for him. I'm a Hall of Fame voter, and I have voted for him for every year. But it's just, you know, obviously there's just people that are anti-sprinters, which is a shame in terms of this Hall of Fame. I think it's kind of a black mark on the Hall of Fame, quite frankly, that he's not in there. But I knew his trainer and jockey extremely well, Alex Solis and Bruce Headley. I played basketball with Bruce Headley near Santa Anita on a few Tuesday occasions. And in fact, one time he set a screen for me and got hit in the head with an elbow and was bleeding profusely from the mouth. And I said, geez, Bruce, you better like head to the hospital. And he said, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. You just keep shooting. So I'll never forget that. I mean, the guy, I'm telling you, he really should have been headed for urgent care or the emergency room. And instead he's telling me, hey, no, this game isn't over. You just keep, I'll keep setting the picks. You keep firing away. And, boy, I'll tell you, that guy, he was quite the character, but he was a tremendous horseman, and look at the job he did with Kona Gold, too. So it's just sad that he's not in there.
John, got about just exactly 15 minutes. Give me a quick, because we did not get to it, and, I mean, these days, as always, are flying by each morning. Let's quickly hit the weekend results from Santa Anita. Your quick summary.
Well, a couple of the highlights. Mr. Fisk, of course, winning the Californian for a trainer who's already in the Hall of Fame, Mr. Bob Bappert. And what a ride by Kazushi Kimura. He had three wins on the day, so did Hector Berrios. Both of those guys are really terrific riders. This was really, I thought, an outstanding ride by Kimura, because he boldly went on the attack to the heavy favorite Judge Miller, turn him for home. That was a shrewd move, and it really paid dividends as he pulled away and pulled off the minor upset at odds of 7-2, as Judge Miller was hammered down to 3-10 favoritism in that race. And then another Hall of Famer, Mr. Richard Mandela, he won the Santa Maria Grade 2 event with Coffee in Bed. Coffee in Bed had only finished a length behind Desert Dawn back in January. That was a very solid effort. I made Coffee in Bed 5-2 on the morning line. She went off at 4-1 and was very game in victory. I thought that was a really illuminating performance in her United States debut by the South American Supershine, who ran a marvelous race in defeat for trainer Phil D'Amato. So I think we're going to hear a lot about her going forward. And Desert Dawn was a disappointment at 3-5 as the 3-5 favorite. But I'm getting the feeling about Desert Dawn that she is kind of the type, she could maybe even drop down into the allowance ranks, that she might finish second or third. I mean, she's very consistent, but she just kind of seems to lack that winning, I don't want to even say desire, but she just I guess you have to say, kind of that winning desire. So she's very reliable to get a check and often finish 1, 2, 3. But boy, you know, I can see a lot more trustworthy 3 to 5 shots than Desert Dawn. So that race to me was kind of ripe for an upset or even a minor upset. And that was the case with Coffee in Bed, who was ridden to victory by another member of the Hall of Fame, the great Mike Smith.
Yeah, good set of stakes over the weekend. John, let's turn to the assignment that I gave you, and I think it's a tough one.
It is.
Right? I mean, it's funny that the Derby would be so much easier to make a line for than this group of 14 fillies. I'm going to take notes as you walk through your suggested early line for the Oaks.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. This race is way tougher, I think, to make the line on than the Kentucky Derby. We'll go right down the order as far as the 14 fillies that currently are listed to go in the race. We'll go from top to bottom in terms of where they are in their points, where they rank on the leaderboard. We'll start with Tarifa. We'll make her a 4-1. More early favorite for this race, for my early line. Then we'll go on to Where's My Ring, 10-1. Power Squeeze, 10-1. Leslie's Rose, 9-2. Torpedo Anna, 5-1. Just FYI, 5-1. Jin Jin, 30-1. Fiona's Magic, 20-1. Regulatory Risk, 20-1. Papa Ginali, 30-1. Everland, 20-1. Lemon Muffin, 20-1. And I think she's a live long shot, because if you're a Thoroughgraph fan, as I'm a huge Thoroughgraph fan, if you just go back one race, you got a 5. That puts her in the mix to possibly win the race. But I'm getting the feeling that people just don't really respect her. So this is the Thoroughgraph people kind of get an edge and can get a horse to either pull a major upset or hit the board or get in the superfecta at a big price. So I kept trying to make her 15, but it just didn't work. And based on what I see, like at odds checker and so forth, and just from the general, nobody's talking about her. So I have her at 20, but I think she's live in the race myself. Into Champagne at 30. And the filly I'm picking to win the race, and that, like, Andy Serling, I have at 19-1 in the Kentucky Oaks future wager. I have $400 on her at 19-1, and that's ways and means at 5-1.
So 5-1, second choice. I think I missed a couple.
9-2, second choice is Leslie's Rose.
Oh, that's true. I see 9-2 now. So let's run it down again, because I missed a couple. Tarifa, 4-1.
Yep.
Where's My Ring, 10-1.
Yep.
Power Squeeze.
10-1.
Interesting. Something that's, you heard Andy Serling earlier. Andy thinks she's dressed up. Interesting. All right. 9-2 on Leslie's Rose.
Yep.
Torpedo Anna.
5-1.
5-1. So co-third choice. Just FYI.
5-1.
So three at 5-1, John.
Yep.
All right. Jin, 30-1.
Yep.
Fiona, 20-1.
Yep.
Regulatory Risk, 20-1 on the power of Chad Brown.
Yep.
Tappet Ginali, Eddie Milligan. I want to get Eddie on. 30-1.
Yep.
Everland, I missed.
20.
20, and Eric Foster is due a call. Lemon Muffin, and what a great story. We're probably going to talk to Steve Asmussen tomorrow, and I certainly am going to ask him about Keith, son Keith, having mounts in the Oaks and the Derby. Into Champagne, Lemon the Muffin, 20-1, 30-1 Into Champagne, 5-1 Ways and Means.
Correct.
There we go.
Like you say, Zach, listen, when you gave me that assignment yesterday morning, I basically been working on it. I was still tweaking it this morning. I mean, I'm sure if I went to do it again tomorrow, it might be slightly different, but I feel pretty good that that's a pretty good ballpark for this. I mean, I, I wouldn't rule out Leslie's Rose going favorite personally, but it looks like Tarifa. Again, she's the favorite, the Dodge Checker. And I kind of get the feeling, you know, if I had to definitely pick a favorite here, who I think will be, I would go to her. But boy, I'm telling you, Leslie's Rose off that Ashland and how much she cost and the number she got and so forth, I could see her going favored. That's why I do have her as the second choice. And then you've got that next three, and I'm telling you, any one of those three could get bet. They could win the race, Torpedo Anna, Just FYI, and Ways and Means. Thing about Just FYI, you know, her numbers were so soft as a two-year-old that she already showed in her first start this year how she has moved forward off of those soft numbers. And with Bill Mott as her trainer, you just really, I think a lot of people recognize this is a filly who could take a major step forward off her 2024 debut. So, but that Torpedo Andy, you heard Andy Serling sing her praises, and understandably so. She looked fantastic last time out. I mean, this is a very talented filly. You know the confidence from Kenny McPeak, who, you know, expressed that confidence to you. So, you know, that I really feel that those are what you might call the major players. Tarifa, Leslie's Rose, Torpedo Anna, Just FYI, and Ways and Means. And Ways and Means is a tricky one to try to understand how she's going to get bet. I mean, I debated between making her 6-1. I wouldn't go higher than that, but I don't even feel really that would be proper to make her higher than 5 when the people that really, you know the situation with her. I mean, this filly, you heard Mike Welsh, you know, talk her up big. I mean, this is a very, anybody just go back and watch her career debut and you can see she certainly has a license to win this race without any question.
I'm going to guess that Power Squeeze comes up from that 10-1.
Could be. I had her, I've been debating between, I have it scratched out here. I had her 12 a
little
bit.
Yeah, 12 to 15, it seems.
But she's 10 at Odds Checker. She's also 10 at another online site. You know, and that's splitting hairs. I mean, 10 yeah. to 12. So, I decided to stick with 10 at her. But I wouldn't disagree with you that she could drift up from there. Absolutely.
It's strictly a question of lesser known connections. I mean, and to some degree, you do get, you know, you are going to get that. I mean, you got a 2-year-old champion.
That could be the case with Where's My Ring, too.
That's true. That's true, because Val Brinkerhoff is not a eastern half of the country household name by any means. That's a great point.
So either one of those could go
or
to
both.
They, very easy.
Both.
That's right. Or both. That's right. Exactly.
And then, you know, then there's going to be one of these, one of that big middle group, that Just FYI, Leslie's Rose and Ways and Means, that
and Torpedo Anna
are all going to be something that's going to be fascinating.
I
can tell you from conversation with Jerry Brown, there is next to nothing separating these fillies as opposed to the Derby. You're talking in terms of number power and you know the way lengths are determined, you can put a blanket over.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I have such respect, as I say, for Thoroughgraph, and that means I have tremendous respect for Mr. Brown, and for him to say that, that makes me feel good that in terms of those horses you're talking about, those fillies you're talking about, I have them at odds of 4, 9-2, 5, 5, and 5. Well, so I would say that is reflecting his opinion of those horses.
100%. And, you know, that's one of the oldest maxims in betting by watching the board. When the public can't make a favorite, a clear favorite, that just indicates that it's an open affair. And from that standpoint, I mean, maybe when I say open affair, that there does seem to be, well, in fact, Andy kind of referenced it too. There seems to be, you know, that group that where it seems overwhelmingly likely the winner would come from. But then after that, you know, good luck building a ticket, because there is a horse or two that is going to interlope here.
That's why I say Lemon Muffin is my candidate for that.
Good for
because
you.
All you got to do is go back one race on her, and her thoroughbred number puts her right in the mix, and she's going to be a big price.
Yes, she is. She absolutely is. And you know, we can say, by the way, definitively, because I heard from both of the Wilkses today, Ian and Tracy. I ran into Tracy yesterday in fact, I got to put up the pictures of a little bit of a tour that Darren Rogers gave me of the paddock and these new clubs. But I ran into Tracy, and we can confirm that Into Champaign is running in the Oaks. They're absolutely a go. So any question any uncertainty has dissipated. But
which is not good news to the Our Pretty Women camp.
No, but it's funny. Ron Anderson, who's got a pretty good barometer, he made it sound like they fully expect to get in. So I wonder.
He did. So it does make you wonder who he feels is not going to run of those 14 that I listed that are currently listed to be running in the Oaks.
Exactly. Well, the regulatory risk situation kind of, I think, took people a little bit by surprise that Seth Klarman and Chad Brown, you know, came back the other direction to run. Well, John, I appreciate you doing this, and you'll have your final column and your Derby selections, I would guess, by what? By next Monday.
Well, no, that'll come out the Wednesday before
Wednesday?
The Derby.
Okay, Wednesday.
Yeah.
All right.
So a week from tomorrow. But so looking forward to that. But also looking forward to your coverage for the rest of this week and next week. When you're getting people on as sharp as Mike Welsh and talking to trainers like Ken Peek and these trainers that are so good, Whit Beckman. You know, Whit Beckman is obviously a very good trainer, and he came up under very good trainers, but he's not a household name.
That's right.
That's your horse that he's kind of like.
Yeah, so, no, that's seems to be my lean, I think, without a doubt. I gotta thank Whit Beckman and Kenny McPeak, as well as Andy Serling and Mike Welsh, of course, John White just now, and Brian Bouye in the Hall of Fame announcement, and plus we got a visit in with Ron Anderson and Joel Rosario. The latest Hall of Fame jock. Back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock, the Wednesday edition. We'll talk to Sid, and we'll talk to Dick Powell as well, and Seth, and some other guests. And Will, if you missed anything, you can catch up on the archive and the pods, and I'll talk to you in the morning.
Hey,
I'm afraid he's not, Miss Fishmore. Dexter's trilogy problem is way out of hand.
The latest racing news. It's Apple Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsemen, nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile. In the $150,000 Penn Oaks, will both be run Friday, May 31st, on a card that also includes two Pennsylvania bred stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238.